Welcome to the Wildlife Health Talks. This is the 34th episode introducing WDA members and their amazing work all over the world. My guest today is Dr. Florencia Soto. She has just returned from a trip to the eternal ice of Antarctica. She was part of an international team of researchers who set out to study the presence and impact of high pathogenicity avian influenza subtype H5 on an Arctic wildlife. Flo is based at the Institute of Biology of Marine Organisms in Puerto Madryn in Argentina. In her PhD, Flo studied the host parasite association between Antarctic seals and their lice. Currently, she focuses on the health status of Antarctic pinnipeds and seal lice as a potential vector of infectious disease. Welcome to the show, Flo.
Hey, Kat.
Flo, tell me, when did you join the WDA?
Honestly, I don't remember the exact date, but I remember that one of my friends called Lucas Arce, who is also involved in the WDA, told me something about this amazing organization that works with wildlife conservation. We are in a congress, I remember, and they told me that they offer membership grants, so I sent a request to get the WDA student membership grant, and then I start taking part in the Latin American student chapter first. Now I'm joining to the early careers group, so quite new in this association.
And that's awesome.
I want to say, great, Lucas, to send me that link and that all of the information.
Nice, that's very cool. And I have to say, from what I heard, you guys have been doing really well in terms of like being active as a WDA chapter, and there's so much stuff happening. And I always hear about how fun and how cool your conferences are, and I'm always like, oh, why am I not down there? That sounds like so much fun. Tell me, what's your favorite WDA related experience so far?
I'm a biologist, I'm not a veterinarian. So for me, it's a great opportunity to share with veterinarians and other biologists that are working with wildlife all over the world. And as I mentioned before, I am a new member, so I'm really learning a lot and enjoying the variety of disciplines that are represented here and the way the group is organized into sections, as I mentioned, in the Latin American section, the Europe section. I like that part. I don't have the opportunity yet to participate in a congress or conference, but I will love it. So yes, I enjoy to at least the online meetings and that kind of stuff.
Let's start talking a bit about your work. But my first and most important question here is, do you actually like the cold?
Not at all, honestly. I have to admit I'm a very cold person, but I have been adapting to an Antarctic summer, and now I can say I'm loving it. But because I used to travel during summer, and the temperature in summer is from -2 to -4 degrees, so it's not too cold. It's cold, but it's, you can adapt it and survive. During summer, I really enjoy it, but I don't want to be there during winter for sure.
Oh, that's very fair. Well, I'm glad you adjusted to the climate. That's good to hear. Yeah, let's talk about your research a bit. Before speaking with you, I didn't even know that such a thing as seal lice exist. What's so special about the lice of seals?
Okay, so for me, lice are like my absolute treasure. They allow me to meet Antarctica, so I really love them. And they are the only marine insects. So that's the most important thing, that they are so interesting, because they to live with an amphibian host, they have to develop many adaptations, like morphological, behavioral, and ecological adaptations to cope with the amphibious lifestyle of their host, that are the seals. And this works in a long coevolutionary process. As seals may spend more than the 80% of the time submerged and perform extreme dives. Some, for example, here, the southern elephant seals dives more than 2,000 meters deep. So lice can adapt to that kind of life, because they are ectoparasites, but they live all their life on their host. They don't spend on land or on ice while the host is diving. So they really are adapting to tolerate hypoxia, high salinity, low temperature, condition of huge hydrostatic pressure. They are, yeah, my absolute treasure again. They are amazing for sure.
Wow, that is really impressive. And I feel like most people, including me, have probably never thought about are there insects in the sea? I definitely haven't. But at the next pub trivia night, we all know the answer to that. There are only lice in the ocean. That is very cool. And tell me, how much of a pain are those lice to the seals? Do you sometimes find basically infested seals that really suffer from a very high lice burden? Or is it most of the time that they have a few lice, but it doesn't really bother them much?
Honestly, I think that lice, you can consider them pathogens, but from a low pathogenicity. Like they don't cause damage because, for example, in Crabbeater seals and Weddell seals, you count you how many seals had lice of the small population that you are sampling. And in Weddell and Crabbeater seals, we found like 50% prevalence, that is high prevalence. Contrast with the leopard seals, for example, that is a solitary species, the prevalence was 14%. And in Crabbeater seals, for example, I found 1,800 lice of all in one seal. We used to take blood sample also to study the body condition or at least some parameters of the seals. I didn't find any relationship among the health status or body condition with the big burden of lice. So I can say that lice are not damage the seals. They had low pathogenicity.
That's very interesting. Cool. In your PhD, you studied the host parasite associations. What else did you find about their host parasite relationship?
I will summarize because I don't want to tell
Of
about
course.
all my thesis. But during the 5 astral summer that I had the opportunity to take the lice seal samples, we worked with 150 seals, and I analyzed the effects of host sex, age class, and year of sampling on the prevalence and mean abundance of these lice that I told you. And mainly, I found that lice were more common in younger seals. So all the younger seals have lice, mostly in the three species. And we used to think that eggs cannot survive submerged. And now we find that yes, they can survive. They cannot hatch submerged, but they can survive the immersion. And then when the seal come back to or hull out to the ice, they can go on the cycle. And so I can say that the lice show different reproductive strategies, and these differences are related to the host diving behavior and hollow pattern. So lice population dynamics are truly determined by seals' behaviors. They have co-evolved and co-adapted to along the co-evolutionary process. And yes, they show this amazing adaptation to live in the species. In each species of seals.
That's very cool. So the eggs basically, in a way, learn to hold their breath while the seal is diving.
Yeah.
And for your work with the seals, you have been involved in multiple captures, handling, and sampling of the animals. How do you catch and restrain an Arctic seal?
Here I can say that my director, it was a whole experience. Javier Negrete lives in La Plata, en la Universidad Nacional de La Plata in Buenos Aires. He teach me everything, but anyway, I try to learn always when I can. I had the opportunity to share campaigns with him or with the other experts of the teams, because we daily sailed the coast to search for seals. And then when the animals were sedated with a dart containing teletamine and solazepam, I don't know how to pronounce in English the correct name, but we use a dart with the drug. And after sedation, we have 20 or 30 minutes to take all samples and measures because my thesis was a small part of a big project. And so we collected blood samples from isotope studies and to chemical studies. Also, we take a skin sample, hair and whiskers. Yeah, so we have 30 minutes to take whole samples, the sample that I use for my PhD and for other collaborations. And when we finish, we wait for the animal to wake up and able to come back to the sea. And so then we can come back to boat and going working.
That sounds like you're not necessarily always risking your life when catching a seal. I'm really glad to hear that.
Not at all, but sometimes, yeah, I forget to mention that you used to work on ice. So yeah, when you work on ice, it's difficult because if the ice break or something, yes, it does the danger part. But fortunately or luckily for me, I am here, so everything is fine until now.
Oh, I'm very glad. And what have been some of your personal highlights and challenges of this work?
I think that working in Antarctic is really a challenge. You never know when you are leaving or when you are coming back. And so I think that I related more that this is a special place that you need to adapt to live there. And yes, I think that it involves many, many things. But yes, it's, being there is a really challenge.
That sounds like being there and working there sounds a bit like this has been your personal highlight at the same time as being a huge challenge. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
That makes a lot of sense. So you've also been investigating if sea lice might be a potential vector for infectious diseases for the seals. Have you found any evidence there yet?
Yeah, I have evidence from the northern elephant seals. They mentioned that it was an alpha virus there, and that's why I want to study this in those lice population. And yes, we found that our lice are vector of some bacteria, but our lice from other pinnipeds from Patagonia, from southern elephant seals, I cannot get the results yet from the Antarctic seal lice, but it's an ongoing work in collaboration with Dr. David Ermer from Austria. So we are sharing that date with him and waiting for the results. But yes, we think that at least bacteria are present on lice.
Let's talk about your most recent expedition to Antarctica. That was a huge one. You just returned from the, I mentioned in the intro, the HPAI Australis expedition, as it was called, where an international team of researchers set out to study the presence and impact of high pathogenicity avian influenza of the subtype H5 on Antarctic wildlife. How long were you gone for on the trip?
Yeah. Yes, that was a crazy and fun experience for me too, because I came back from Antarctica on March 12th and came back to Antarctica again in the Australis on March 13th. So that's why I was in Antarctica for 3 months, because I finished my work and then joined to the another campaign. So I traveled to Antarctica twice this year, and that was, yeah, crazy and funny.
You did find that this subtype of avian influenza actually made it to Antarctica. How is that possible since Antarctica is such a remote place? And do you know how long it has been around?
Yeah, it's recently, from this season, in fact, because since 2020, its unprecedented spread of avian influenza has caused significant mortalities of wild birds on almost global scale. Following the arrival of HPAI-H5 to South America by the end of 2022, and its arrival to Antarctica was predicted to occur and finally confirmed this year in February. I had the opportunity to share with the team that I take the first sample from Skuas and Primavera, and we took a swab from tracheal and cloacal swabs. And in a collaboration with I work with the Instituto Antártico Argentino that I don't mention, but it's a good opportunity to mention now. And the Instituto Antártico Argentino made arrangement with Chile and Spain to do the first testing So we send the samples from Chilean ships to the Spain station, to Antonio Alcami, that process the sample and confirm the avian influenza H5.
And you mentioned the skuas. Those are highly migratory birds, is that right?
Yeah, they are hardly migratory, so yeah, it could be that they are transporting mainly the viruses.
They brought in the virus and then might have spread it to other Antarctic wildlife, including the mammals.
Yeah, could be a possibility, but honestly, we don't know yet. Be mammal to mammal transmission or maybe bird to mammal transmission. They are studying that part, and it's not my topic, so I cannot explain correctly, but I know that they are investigating which are the main routes of transmission.
Yeah, that sounds like this virus already has a huge impact, which is really tragic. Are there any predictions about the future impact?
As I mentioned before, I'm not an expert in this topic, but I'm curious to see how the virus will impact wild life in the Antarctic. We need to discover, first of all, which animals are the mainly vectors, and
That makes sense. And yeah, it really sounds like the research is only at the very beginning, right? So we will see in the probably next few years how it unfolds. And it sounds very much like and has its own pandemic. We were all busy with COVID in 2020, and avian influenza was the pandemic of Arctica at that time, and it's still ongoing. It sounds like we will hear much more about it in the future in a sad way. So fingers crossed, it's not as bad as it might sound now. Let's go back briefly to your experience of living in Antarctica and working there. So what was the longest you've ever spent there?
the longest campaign was the last one that I mentioned, that I traveled twice to Antarctica from the end of December to the beginning of April. So yeah, 3 completed months living there.
That is a long time. What is it that fascinates you about the place?
I'm completely in love with the beautiful landscape of ice floating anywhere in the middle of whales, seals, penguins, and it's really, really nice. You don't have internet, at least the last years, and so you are really, really connecting with the nature in a way that's really special. So I enjoy that part also, because now in the era that we are all communicating, being in a place without internet is nice for me, at least.
Yeah, no, I can definitely see that. And did you find it sometimes challenging to k keep up a good mood and keep up like a healthy level of mental health in such extreme environments?
I think that the most important thing when you are far away from home for many, many months is the people you work with. And I have the pleasure to share with nice people that became friends, and they really, really make the difference. And when I am a little bit worried, I also enjoy knitting hats or scarves for my nephew during my free time, or sometimes walk a little bit. So yes, you always find something to do or play the game. But during the summer, you should work a lot, because there are short campaigns in terms of you need to see how is the weather every day, and if it's possible to work. And you try to do all the work, and then you don't have much free time to do anything. So yeah, it's fine.
Nice. So that sounds like you have most of your Christmas presents are already set for the
Yeah.
end of the year. I love that. Oh, it sounds like such an exciting experience. I'm a little jealous. That sounds awesome. But you mentioned earlier that you are soon going on a holiday, and I feel like you really deserved your time off now to relax a little bit.
Yeah, I need and I want.
That sounds good. Thanks for being my guest on the show and sharing your story about your work and your research in Antarctica, Flo.
Thanks to you, Kat, and the audience for giving me the opportunity to share a part of my work and my life with you. It was an honor.
Thanks so much for listening to the Wildlife Health Talks. We will be back with a new story in 2 weeks. Bye for now.